seeing yourself as an artist can really help, because it's like, you might, you know, do this kind of art and then your art can shift, right? You might be a painter and you paint sunsets and then you decide you're painting farmhouses or whatever, right? So I think from the internal side, being like, it's okay if I'm an artist and I want to change my craft, whether that's the content you're putting out or the behind the scenes of more like the business you want to run or the voice you want to have. I think that it's really helped to be like, oh wait, I get to make whatever version of this business I want it to be.
Welcome to Make Bank with Marie Wold. I'm Marie, and for the last decade, I've been helping women set and hit unrealistic goals while building their definition of a rich life. This podcast is your ultimate destination for unfiltered discussions about personal development, entrepreneurship, wellness, confidence, wealth building, relationships, and so much more. We're creating our dream lives together, and I'm so glad you're here. Now let's jump into today's episode. Welcome, welcome back to the pod. I am so glad you're here. And today I have someone who has been like in my circle, in my field of awareness for so long. And I cannot believe that we are just now having a podcast conversation. Today I have Mallory Rowan. And Mallory and I had very overlapping like spheres, very overlapping kind of like industry friends and stuff back in the fitness days. So I'm super excited to have her on the podcast because much like me, she has made so many pivots. She has evolved so much since her early days. And at 22, she had built a globally recognized powerlifting brand that almost killed her. We're going to go into that today. At 26, she decided to step back and refocus on how to build businesses without burnout going forward. And then by 29, she had built a $1 million net worth. Mallory has founded 3 multi-6-figure businesses. She's expanded her portfolio as a real estate investor, business investor, and has been featured for her anti-burnout approach in Business Insider, CBC, Shopify. She's also an award-winning business owner, content creator, and Lululemon Legacy Ambassador, which we love. And I am so excited to dig into all of this, like especially your pivots, your burnout, social media strategy, because you're absolutely killing it there and you've seen so many things come and go in our space. So welcome to the show, Mallory. So glad you're here.
So happy to be here. Like it's like you said, like over time, I feel like we've just been like rotating in the same world and interesting to like make similar shifts. So it'll be fun to chat.
Yeah. We have so much here, but I want people who aren't like OG back from the fitness space to get some context of how you came up. Like, what does it mean that your first brand almost killed you? Like, you can't lead with that and then like not give us some context. So tell us more about that.
Yeah, for sure. So my first business I started while I was in university, so like college here in Canada. And I started it while I was still in school. I was also already working in the corporate world because I knew I was really into business from an early age. So I kind of moved from like high-tech marketing, very slow B2B world to the startup world. And then at the same time, I was taking classes on entrepreneurship. And so they really encouraged us to actually build a business, which was a great initiative. They're like, if you're, you know, doing these class projects, you might as well make it something you want to do. And that's kind of how LPD was born, which was our first business, a powerlifting apparel brand. And it was a lot for sure. Still being in school, working full time for a startup, then also having my own startup. And with powerlifting, it's such a full on sport, right? We were in the gym for 3 hours at a time training. Yeah, so it definitely added up. And I think there was a lot of like identity and brand we can talk all day about there too. So much pressure to still be competitive in the sport as someone running a business that was so linked to the community. So over time, I think just all of those factors were really adding up for me and my body started to fall apart. It wasn't until I went to the doctors and she was like, oh, you definitely have pneumonia. How long have you had this cough? And it had just become like so regular.
Oh my God. Oh,
I was like, oh, like, I guess.
Yeah, it was like the boiling frog thing of like, it just came on and you just lived with it for long enough that you're like, oh.
Yeah, exactly. So then, it was one of those things after the doctor cleared me from a few rounds, I was like, well, I still kind of feel like trash. Like, I'm not actually healthy. And I already have thin hair to start. But I was definitely like losing hair. I was getting rashes from going to the gym. Like I would do the hack squat and then have like rashes for a week just from like the pressure. So I could tell things weren't really stable in my body anymore.
Yeah.
So that was when I really stepped back, honestly, because I had to, and really reevaluate things. But it was a really nice blessing in disguise because we had just been so go, go, go that we hadn't thought, like, you know, do we want to make t-shirts forever? Where are we taking this business?
Yeah.
So it brought up a lot of really important questions.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. And I remember, like, you guys had launched your, like, bar grip t-shirts, which I think you guys were the first ones to ever do that, right? Like, you thought of that.
We did it with A7.
Okay,
another
cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So So you were like innovators, you were like really visible in the space. And so I had a very similar kind of parallel experience, but like in the bodybuilding world of like, I had been running essentially a full-time influencer business, had a side job working for a supplement company. Maybe also there's overlap of my side job working at my gym, and I was in school full time and prepping for bodybuilding competition. So like very parallel, but just like bodybuilding edition.
Yes.
And was like a full time influencer all at the same time. And I hit complete burnout as well. Like hormones trashed, uncontrollable weight gain, depression, anxiety, just like a shell of myself. And it wasn't until I had to kind of hit that breaking point before my body had to literally revolt before I was like, oh, maybe this is not good. Like, maybe I should change something, right? And
yeah.
So, but I also had the identity thing of like, well, I just built hundreds of thousands of people in an audience, in my audience between YouTube and Instagram and all these sponsorships and stuff based on being a bikini competitor and based on my physique and based on my workouts. And like, mm-hmm. Now I can't identify with any of those things. And so like, there was for sure that identity crisis. What went through your head when you, or like, how did you navigate that mental block around like needing to change, but recognizing that changing would really impact everything else?
Yeah. I mean, it was definitely a thing that was easy to spiral about in the worst way.
Yeah.
So I spent a lot of time doing that instead of doing a productive thing. But that's sometimes too, when we're just at that bottom, right? Like all we can do is stress, and it kind of becomes that cycle where I feel like, I mean, we both had this where we were traveling a lot too, which can be hard on certain bodies more than others. And for me, it was just brutal. Like I would go to the gym and I would be doing warm-up sets for my squats, and I was supposed to have a heavy day. And I would just break down because like the warm-ups were moving so slow. And then my brain was just going of like, well, I need to hit these squats because if I don't hit these numbers at provincials, like people really follow me because I'm strong. And that's the thing that I have. And if that goes away, it's so scary when it feels like your livelihood and this thing you love so much is like all in one. And for me, it was just like almost having to separate that by the sheer fact of like the reality of like the squat is not moving. Like at the end of the day, we can be as upset as we want, but like you can't squat 300 pounds the way that you would like to, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that was part of it for me. I think honestly, like recognizing that what I needed was a little space to figure it out was something that I really did well for myself. Of when provincials was coming up, I could have gotten like a medical pass to be able to still do nationals the next year. And so, you know, it felt like such a relief to find out I had pneumonia and could skip provincials,
which
even in itself is a weird thing to be like, oh, thank God something's wrong with me. So I like won't have
like,
to do
thank
this
God thing. There's like a legitimate like doctor thing that I can point this to so that it's valid to like everyone.
Yeah, exactly. And then instead of getting a medical note for it, I just kind of took it as my out of like, well, if I don't do provincials, I can't do nationals. So it was buying me some time because I knew like I can't turn around and train for nationals, even if the pneumonia goes away. So for me, it was buying that time. And, you know, people would always be excited and ask, well, when are you going to compete next? So I would say like, oh, I think I'm going to do a meet in the summer. And just as I got closer, it gave me that space to really like have an answer that I could put at a distance for now, but on the inside be like, okay, what actually is my next step? And I think that was like a nice layer of protection when we are people that are so transparent about everything in our life. And it wasn't a lie, right? Like I was hoping to be able to meet again, but there was that little voice in my head that's like, I don't think we're going to be doing that.
Yeah, I had that too. Of like, I finished my last competition and then I went on to do like the bodybuilding.com spoke small search, which was like a big deal back in the day. Yep. And after that, everyone was like, oh, so like you're in off season now. When are you going to prep again? And I'm just like, I literally would die if I tried to prep right now. Like I have no answer for you. And I think, I can't remember exactly what I said, but like, I definitely had that identity spiral. And especially when it's so public, like, I think that's the whole other thing is people are expecting something from you and you've built an audience and you've built a community around a certain thing. So then you gave yourself space. I also did that, but I think I kind of just tried to grab on to like the next thing that like gave me some semblance of like what I was doing before, which for me, like I tried powerlifting and, you know, prepped for me and like did all the things. And then like my body was also like, still no, still absolutely not, you know, those 3-hour workouts were like, no, that's just not a thing. And then I was like, oh, I really need to like, really need to fix things. So once you took space, like what were some of the introspective things, like what were you thinking about, what were you pondering on to be like, where do I pivot next? Because like the people listening to this podcast, these women are super ambitious, they're usually like multi-passionate, they have a lot of things that they're interested in, and they maybe are feeling burned out from their corporate job or like the stresses of like their family or being a mom or whatever, but they have things that they want to pursue. How did you decide like where you went next?
Mm-hmm. I think for me, it's like just knowing I've always built my businesses where like my happiness is a priority. And it's like understanding that like there's always going to be tough things. It's not being like, I don't do anything I don't enjoy for my business. Yeah. But it's like knowing that at the core of it, if I'm not happy and enjoying myself, I've lost the fun element. And now I kind of have a 9-to-5. I'm just the boss, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like this weird, like you're still just as stuck. So I really think like prioritizing happiness before everything else makes everything else fall into place, versus when you prioritize everything else before your happiness, that's when it falls apart and you end up with neither. You're not happy and usually you're not successfully fulfilling that other thing because there's so much happening internally. So I think that's the first thing, is knowing that you want to prioritize your happiness and being okay with asking those questions of like, does happiness mean I don't compete ever again? Does it mean that I need to, for now, step away for a year and then reevaluate, and really like asking yourself those questions and trusting the gut instincts that come. I think too, especially with multi-passionate people, is just knowing like you have proof that you've already like done these things. You can do it all again, even if it's in a different font, you know? Like, I think sometimes we're like, but this is the thing I've built, and we're holding on so tight to it. And it's realizing the same way you built an influencer career early on out of nothing, like you can turn around and do that again. And I think sometimes we're just like scared to let go of that thing, because it means finding out what's next for us, which is exciting once we get going, but it can feel really scary of like, especially when we have communities, what if my community doesn't want to come on board? I think for me, something I told myself was people followed me because I was strong. So when the lifts were suffering, it was so stressful. And then the more I opened up about it, the more I realized like people were really connecting with me as a person, with my perspective on my training, right? And it was kind of just my own narrative that it was the fact that I was strong instead of who I was and them enjoying my perspective.
Yeah. I had definitely the same narrative of like internal that, okay, well, if I don't have an 8-pack, like if I'm not like shredded, if I don't have my bikini girl workouts constantly getting pumped out, then like, what would people stay for? And I think we're both proof that if you do a good job of actually building a personal brand and like actually building a genuine community instead of just like kind of pandering for likes and like trying to just feed the algorithm beast, basically, like if you actually build a strong personal brand, people will follow you. And of course, I'm sure you had the same thing. Like, of course, there were people that dropped off. Of course, there were people that were no longer interested in the new direction, and like, that's totally fine and totally valid. But I have so many people still today that are like, Marie, I've been following you since you like sold your recipe ebooks, which is what I did in high school. Like, that was like 11 years ago. And I have people that are still with me to this day, and they have no interest in like starting a business. They have no, they're never going to buy anything from me even, but they just like, you know, we have like that relationship. Like we have built a relationship, whether it's two-sided or parasocial or whatever, but like we have a connection over time. And so what do you think you did right about your personal brand and like the relationship building, the brand building that has allowed you to make these pivots and like carry people with you where they're not like getting whiplash or just completely like falling off?
Yeah. I think for me, my voice has always really remained consistent of sharing my perspective on the world, whether that's in relation to lifting, whether that's in relation to building my business, even renovating this cottage that we just did. It's always about like actually being myself. Like you said, not pandering for likes. I think when we try to put on that persona, we've seen it so many times in the online space where people grow these massive pages, accounts, whatever it might be. And then they drop off and go have often like a spiritual awakening, to be honest, because they realize like, I built this thing, I don't know who I am anymore. I played into so many versions of the algorithm that I've kind of lost myself in the process. And so I think really remaining true to what I want to share, what my voice is, has been a really big piece of that. I think never, for me, I've always known like if I niche down super hard, I'm going to hate what I build and I'm going to be so bored of it and feel really trapped. So it's one of those things too, where sometimes you accept the quote unquote slower growth because I don't want to like, you know, build a fitness page or a business page to a million and then be like, I don't really want to talk about that thing anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Where you get sick of it. And I definitely like have had those moments too, where I was like, I was like the IFYM girl. Like first I was the clean eating girl and then there was the IFYM girl and then I was blah, blah, blah. And then I was like, oh, like somehow we need to zoom out at least a little bit. Like somehow we need to take a step back and make it more about like connection and make it more about the personal brand and make it more about what I'm excited to talk about. And something that I was talking to a mentor of mine about recently was like using your business as your art. And I think that's really what building a standout, like sustainable personal brand is like your business and your platform and your content is like your self-expression. Right.
Yeah. A friend of mine has a really great book called Find Your Fuck Yeah by Alexis Rockley. And it talks a lot about like when we almost like become a personal brand and in that side of it. And I just think it's so important to like separate from this personal brand persona that we're building and like just really understanding like what is that true voice and not playing into like becoming a character. I always say your personal brand can be like a version of yourself. Like if there's a super lovely side of you and you don't want to bring out the introverted side, that's okay too. But it's like creating that consistent brand experience is going to be the thing that builds community over time. And it's also going to be the thing that helps you sustain it over time because you're actually being yourself versus like constantly putting on a mask. At some point you and the mask are not going to agree in.
Yeah. Yeah. And then there's just so much, the resistance builds and the resentment builds and the frustration builds. And you, that's, I think, where a lot of people have their like burn it down moment, like, and they just cannot go anymore. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they also end up building a business based on things like what is not genuine and authentic to who they are as well. Like it just kind of all snowballs together. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think when you build on what's working at the time, it can be a useful tool. But if that's your main thing, like if you're building a YouTube channel and people are really focused on, let's say, organic social and you're like leaning into hashtags because everyone's asking about it, I think it becomes so much more exhausting because later you're pivoting because you have to because a new thing is caught versus pivoting because you've intentionally chosen, oh, this other perspective I'm really passionate about now.
Yeah. Yeah. So where do you kind of find the balance between having enough like breadth with a D of like of the things that you're talking about and the your creativity and your interests, like having enough breadth there, but then also being strategic enough where your audience is converting and like you are building a business and not just a, I don't know, just an audience of people who are interested in you, but not necessarily primed to buy anything and like build a business from. So where is that balance for you? Or how do you think about that?
Yeah, I think on like the internal side, something that Alexis's book talks about is that like artist concept, mm-hmm. and how seeing yourself as an artist can really help, because it's like you might, you know, do this kind of art and then your art can shift, right? You might be mm-hmm. a painter and you paint sunsets and then you decide you're painting farmhouses or whatever, right? Yeah. So I think from the internal side, being like, it's okay if I'm an artist and I want to change my craft, whether that's the content you're putting out or the behind the scenes of more like the business you want to run or the voice you want to have. I think that helps me, because I think everyone is so like, let's build a seven-figure business, that you're like, okay, I have to be on that one-track mind, mm-hmm. or I have to get somewhere where I have a business that looks like that. And for me, it's really helped to be like, oh wait, I get to make whatever version of this business I want it to be. Mm-hmm. That helps on me on the internal side. I think when it comes to actually like sharing and building that community, is finding like even using like different features to bring those things out. So I will still to this day like reference my workouts in Instagram stories, because it's yeah. very much health and wellness is such a part of my day-to-day life and people appreciate that. But I think the difference is like, I'm not then going to post something that's like, here's my top five glute exercises as a reel.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
you're like really jumping, right? Like then you experience that in feed and go like, oh wait, since when is this person like now a fitness coach, right? So I think thinking of like really putting yourself in your audience's shoes of what does mm-hmm. the overall experience feel like? Because those things are going to naturally fit in of like, yeah, I make a smoothie, but again, I'm probably not going to put a smoothie recipe in my feed because it right. doesn't really go towards the bigger thing that I want to teach. What I might do is have, you know, a day in a life vlog where you see me making mm-hmm. a smoothie, but I'm maybe mm-hmm. talking about an important business or personal development mm-hmm. concept. Right. So I think yeah. like finding your ways to weave in different aspects, but really keeping like your feed true to what it is that you really want to put out there. And I think also having those launch moments is fine too. Right. Like I would say in February, I was much more promotional in my feed than I have been mm-hmm. in a long time. And it's almost like I created that expectation with my audience of, hey, I don't talk nonstop about like, look at these case studies, but I'm going to hit you with like 5 days of like absolutely incredibly stories about my students. And I find there's a really good give and take there. If people are actually like excited about it and almost mm-hmm. pay more attention because they're like, oh, I never really get to hear about this side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the balance. And I like what you said about leaning into different things based on like the feature that you're using, where stories get yeah. to be so much more like in the moment, organic, lifestyle. Mm-hmm. So that of course is the perfect place to pull in different things. Like people who watch my stories see my horse like a lot because yeah. I'm always at the barn, but like she's not everywhere on my feed because I'm not like, my business isn't horse girl CEO. Like it's it's part of my story. It's part of why, like my motivation behind having a business and being an entrepreneur and like having a freedom-based lifestyle and blah, blah, blah. So like I'll weave it in, but like you said, it's always through that bigger lens of like, but what's like, how does it connect back to like what I'm here to teach or do, or like the impact I'm having?
When yeah. I even hear you mention your horse, immediately my brain is like already has that story just from your content of like where you put herself in a position where she could own a horse because she's always wanted to, and then
yeah.
that you get to spend so much time doing that. Whereas if you yeah. were in my feed being like, 3 ways to like feed your horse.
Yeah. Like, okay. Right. Yeah. Like 3 your exercises to improve your position. Like, yeah. and you're like, what the fuck? Yeah. Like yeah. I do have clients who are horse girls because they connect with me on that level. Totally. And like, we have that in common, but we're not, I'm never giving them advice on their riding, you know, like yeah. that's not what we're here to do. So I love that approach. And I also love how much you give people permission to pivot. Cause what I see a lot is people are afraid to even commit to like, what do I talk about on my feed? Like, what is that theme? What is that lens? Because what if I don't love it forever? But I think we're both good examples that like, you can be really strategic. You can be really, I'm saying specific, but not like not in a pigeonhole-y way, but like you can yeah. be really strategic and specific for any amount of time, but as long as a personal brand stays strong, like you have options of where you move next. And if you bring people along the journey, it makes sense, right? Like what you said about, okay, now I'm going to like post a lot of case studies and stuff. And like, here's why. Everyone's like, oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense because Mallory's badass. Like, of course.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Amazing.
Yeah. I think there's just like, I think you're right of like people are so scared to pivot and it's important mm-hmm. to break down like what the fears around it are. I think often it's so easy to say like fear of failure, like it's just become such a buzzword, but it's like, okay, yeah. what around that actually scares you? Is it publicly embarrassing yourself? Like, is it launching something and no one's signing up? Is it, you know, how it'll make you feel because it's the thing you've always wanted to do. So it feels really high risk for you if it mm-hmm. doesn't work out, because I think when we can pinpoint that, we can give ourselves more grace for that pivot too. If you're like, I've always wanted this and I'm scared for it to fail. That's where a coach comes in too, right? Because they can come in and be like, okay, I use the analogy sometimes of like babies walking or like learning mm-hmm. guitar of like when a baby takes its first step, what does it always do next? Like it falls. Yeah. And we never go like, what a loser baby. It's never going to walk.
Okay? Yeah.
So happy for those first steps. We're like cheering. We're like, yes, this baby's like crushing it. Whereas for us, we take those first two steps and we fall and we're like, I suck. This thing was a bad idea. Like, get me out of here. No, like you said, learning guitar. You wouldn't pick up a guitar. And if you couldn't immediately play your favorite song, you wouldn't be like, it's not for me, you know?
Yeah. So no, that's so true.
Yeah. Like giving more of that grace to ourselves that we would almost think of what you would say to your friend. Like if you launched something and you were just like, Mal, I launched this thing and it didn't work at all. I wouldn't be like, what a loser. I'd be like, okay, like how do we feel about it? And also let's break down the components and find the holes, right?
That's just what we learn? How do we move forward? How do we use this as a learning experience and how do we get better from it? Cause like I won't speak for you, but I've had failed launches even after my business was already quote unquote successful. Like I failed so many times in business, in life. And I think maybe people just don't even notice. And so they don't realize, but like, it definitely is just the reality of like having big goals and like going after what you really want is like, it's going to be hard. You're going to fall down. It's going to be painful. You're going to have to face the failure. And I love what you said about like, but what is actually the root of it? And what are you making it mean? Right. Because it's like, oh, well, I don't want to fail publicly, but why? Like, what would you make that mean? Does that mean that like are you making that mean that you're unworthy, unlovable, a loser? like why does failing publicly even matter? You know?
Yeah. And I would even say how public is that failure? Cause like you said, like you've had failed launches. It's not like you actually have to turn around and give somebody a report of your launch on Instagram. Yeah. Right? Like that's the other thing is like you could launch a program and people don't sign up. People aren't like as obsessed with you as you think in that moment. It's so funny because the people that stress about it the most are like the least narcissistic people, right? They're usually very cool, but I'm like, you realize right now you're thinking that people are like consuming your stuff so close that they're going to be like, wait, she didn't follow up on how many people joined that.
Yeah. That they had like a tally, right?
Yeah. In their own like post-it note thing in the background.
Yeah, exactly. So then with that, like if it is about failing forward, if it is about learning, I do think that to be fair, when we came up, like it was, the barrier to entry was lower and the expectations were lower. Like I recorded my first ever YouTube video on my iPhone in my, which iPhone cameras were bad back then. I don't think it'd be a problem if you recorded it with an iPhone camera now, but like back then they were bad. Or maybe it was my MacBook, like front camera, like my photo booth camera or something. But I recorded my first YouTube video and like titled it like my awkward intro video. Like it was bad. My first Instagram post, my first 10,000 followers on Instagram were with like the Valencia filter and it was like an Apple. And then like my Polar watch after my workout, like so bad, right? Content that would absolutely flop now. I do think the barrier to entry is higher, but I also think that like the education and the tools at people's disposal are way better too. So like, what's your perspective there on like the fear that, oh, it's too late or it's too saturated or there's too many people already doing it? Like, where do we find our space there? Or like, where do we kind of reconcile? Like, yeah, there are more people, but also what?
Yeah, I think too, it's like, you're quitting on yourself before you've even started, if that's your perspective, right? Like if you're telling yourself there's too many people, like you got to work through that or else we're not we're not moving forward, because the second that first post doesn't get 10,000 likes, you're going to be like, see, I told you, right? You're like, yeah, looking for that proof. There's a really good example where it's like, if you look around the room and like notice all the brown things, and then if you were to close your eyes and I asked you like name something blue in the room, you wouldn't be able to name the blue thing because all you were looking for was the brown things, right? Mm-hmm. So I think it's very similar. If you're looking for proof that there's no space for you in a space, there's going to be no space, right? Mm-hmm. So I think it's really important to decide what you want that space to look like, to really spend the work at the beginning of getting clear of like, who am I trying to connect with? I obviously want to do this because there's probably some sort of gap. Even if you don't recognize yet, maybe you need to go back and be like, what is the gap? Let's say you're a business coach. Like, is there a space where you wish business coaches were talking about this thing more transparently? Like, that is the gap that you're passionate about. And I think right now, I think one of the perks of like social media in 2024 and forward is like, there's so much space for originality, and like originality is winning, you know, like trends have kind of moved to more, I would say, like personal trends of like people doing like their year end roundup or just like funny things on TikTok. I feel like now it's like the really original voices that are standing out, and original doesn't have to mean like crazy edits and like highly produced. It can be like your iPhone, but you're telling a story in such a unique way. So I think like looking at scenarios and seeing the opportunities, and then just recognizing like there are people cutting through the noise today. And it was hard for different reasons back when we were doing it, right?
Like, there was no one to model. There was like, there was no evidence that what we were doing was like even possible, but we just followed like the passion, followed the nudge.
Exactly. And I know people love to like hate on influencers even today, and that might be a stress for people, but it's like back then, it's like for you to even tell someone what you were doing, they were probably like, wait, what do you do? You know?
Yeah, like, that was not even, the word influencer didn't even exist when I started. Like, that was not even a thing. Imagine, like, even now people feel self-conscious, you know, recording in public or like doing an Instagram story or having their vlog camera. Imagine how we felt in like 2014, 10 years ago, how we felt with my vlog camera and my microphone. Like,
everyone had the road mic.
Yeah. And my, like, the tripod in public. Like, imagine. But I also built like a multiple six-figure business by doing that. You know, like, that's insane.
Yeah. I think so much of it is really like, you know, it's like take a peek at what other people are doing, if it can be a source of inspiration for you or source of education. But for me, it's like, if you think you have a thing and you think you can do this thing, then like put on those blinders and go for it. Because there's always going to be space for new ideas. It's like saying that there's no more products to be invented in like the consumer world. Like, it's just not true.
Yeah. And even doing something 1% different. I think there's a lot of like pressure that people put on themselves. Like, I need to like innovate so hard. I need to reinvent the wheel. I need to do something no one's ever heard of. And it's like, if you can even be 1% different, 1% better than like what's already out there, that's your unique selling point. Like, you have an edge there. 1% is an edge.
100%. I just taught a workshop actually about like a lot of the changes for Instagram this year and like how you can strategize differently. And I use, I have a friend that has a company called Bush Bomb, and they're like, their main product is pubic oil.
Nice.
And like, what's so funny about theirs is I feel like they have such a standout social, but they're not doing anything crazy from like an editing perspective or things like that. But they will like show women with armpit hair. They will like show women that have hair on their belly. And it's just like, we're so not used to seeing that, that when it pops up in my feed, like, it grabs my attention, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like you said, there can be the smallest differences that even feels obvious. Like, they sell oils for hairs and all they're doing is showing hair. But it's like, that in itself is that 1% different.
Yeah.
That, you know, we grew up with the shaving brands where people were shaving non-hairy legs.
Like, legs that were already hairless.
Exactly. So it's, I think, easier than you think to find your 1% difference.
Yeah. Okay. I want to lean more into the social media conversation, because we've kind of like circled around it in multiple different ways, but like social media strategy specifically, things are always evolving. What was working last year isn't going to work this year. So I know you just like did a whole talk about this, but like, what are you finding works right now? Whether it's tactics, format, strategies, like, what are you really leaning into?
Yeah, I definitely would say like the more originality is going to be number one. I think also like with trends taking, I would say a bit of a backseat, or like trends can have those viral moments, but it's not how people are like deeply connecting with you, right? Yeah. It might be how people find your page. So it's, I think it's nice in that way of like when you create content that speaks to your customer at any point in their journey, like that is still the content that's going to win because it's going to have, especially those conversions. Like I have students that have like less than 1400 followers, but they're getting paid because they're getting those conversions, right? So I think we get really caught up in the growth aspect when there's other content we can be creating that really is built on those connections with that customer base. And I think that's so important to be at the front. I also think we're really like moving out of this overstimulated era. So people are definitely being like choosier with who they follow. We're seeing a lot more of like, value conversations and morals, right? We care a lot more than we did back in another time of like, does this person align with me in other things? It doesn't mean that, you know, everyone has to be out talking about social and political issues, but we're definitely seeing a lot more. People are just being choosier, right? So I think that's really an opportunity to be louder about your differences, because when you look like everybody else and sound like everybody else, they're lacking that connection to be like, do I really want to invite this person into my feed that I love so much, you know?
I've also noticed so much fatigue on people saying like everything looks the same. Everyone's saying the same things. Everyone's following the same formats and whatever. And like, we don't have to go into things like faceless accounts or master resale rights, or I mean, we can if you want to. I'm here for it. But like, I think so much of that stuff has made it feel like the current climate. If you're listening to this 6 months down the road, it's probably changed again. But like the current climate, I've had a lot of clients feel this way. I've seen a lot of people talking about like, it just feels like everything looks the same right now. And so then that's exactly what you just said of like, okay, then do something different. Like you don't have to play that game.
Yeah. And I always say like trends are trends because somebody originally did something original.
Yeah. And it hit. Yeah.
And it hit. Right.
So true.
And I think, like you said, there's so much more of these like stock video websites. There's a lot of AI conversations. There's a lot of business coaches and social coaches leaning into AI, which obviously has its benefits. But I think what we're seeing is going to be even more generic content because AI is writing everyone's stuff. And I think so much of the nuance of conversation is in language. And when we're just posting carousels or lists on screen that a robot wrote for us, again, it's like you even just using your voice right now is a way to stand out. Like putting the camera down and recording straight to camera, people will be like, "Wow, it's a real face in my feed talking to me." Like,
wild.
Super simple. I've been finding that lately. Like I do somewhere, I just literally am sitting at this desk talking very unedited, and they're like performing great, even at like 90 seconds long, because people are like, "Oh my gosh, a real person giving me an opinion." That's actually a helpful perspective.
Right. And once we reach like market saturation or that fatigue that we're starting to see with specific types of content that feels very generic and like in a box, like always what we've seen over years is like, then it corrects, right? Then we go the other way. If people want the unedited, they want the face to camera, they want to know that you're a real human with unique thoughts and angles and opinions. And so it's just like, honestly, my philosophy around this stuff over time has just become like, just stay the freaking course. Like just change like the structure to respond to like what's doing well and things like that. But like, chasing the trends, you'll always be behind.
100%. Like that's literally what a trend is, right? And I don't think people realize that enough. They see it as this ticket to go forward, but like you're actually kind of already living in the past, right? Another thing that I talk a lot about this year is like brand recognition, because we are seeing so much. If people can see your content and instantly know it's you,
it's so true. Important.
And that's how you build like that brand equity, that connection, and that trust. Of if I were to post something right now that was like a lime green and red graphic and like all over this place, like you would not think it was my content.
Right.
Versus when my content pops up in people's feeds, they tend to know it's me. And obviously with personal brands, like faces are a great way to do that. I would say you're a really great example too, of you play with different ways to use like screenshots of text, but I always know it. It's like, I feel like sometimes it's in a notes app. Sometimes it's like a written, almost looks more like from an emailer, but there's like certain elements that you hold consistent that like, I know it's you when you're in my feed. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's an element a lot of people are missing because they're doing so much of this, like, well, I saw this person had a meme go viral, so let me try that. And I saw this person had a style, so let me try that. And they're missing like that root of like why that thing was connected to that person's brand and why it works for them. So really leaning into like, I always say like, what's the root lesson from it? What's your version, right? I had a video last year go super viral. It was like a voiceover and I'm like, here, basically just here's five books that helped me get $1 million net worth. Wow. There was a lot of elements at play. Like, it's funny, the small stuff people don't notice. It was a really cool dress. So like, I had a lot of people asking where the dress was from. The house was gorgeous. We have friends, my partner's a realtor, so we have other real estate friends that I just completely renovated, like such a gorgeous home, and I filmed it there, right? The topic of the books itself. So there was all these elements at play, and then it was interesting to watch how many people like took that video and were like, oh, well, this got this many views, so myself, and it was just never hitting. And I didn't necessarily, well, I knew some of the things, like I knew the dress, it got like a really cool cutout in the back. I knew people would like that, but it's like really thinking about why it's going to resonate with your audience. And it was such an interesting experience to watch people make the videos and it just like falls flat because they it wasn't really connected to their brand. They maybe were trying to do also money related books, which didn't really like make sense for their other content. So I think so much like looking at that video and being like, what's the root lesson here? Okay, there's some interesting visual things, right? The home is beautiful. It doesn't mean it has to be a beautiful home. It's just like something about the setting.
Something intriguing about the setting,
Yeah, exactly. The voiceover was a different style than people are used to for book content. Okay, is there something in my industry that I could change the style we're used to seeing? You know, looking at the root lessons.
Yeah, we have to like go a layer deeper than just like, how can I template this and like basically just regurgitate what I just saw.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly.
And that's where I see a lot of people getting in trouble too, is like there are a lot of social media educators, gurus, experts, what have you, who are like, use this like use this trending audio, use this as your hook and go. And it's already in your camera roll. And it's like, yeah, you could get a post out. Like you can check the box, but if you don't actually understand your brand, your audience, like even like social media psychology of like what makes people stop scrolling, then it's not gonna hit. So what are some other like just hacks or tweaks where it's like something becomes more scroll stopping, something becomes more engaging, you know, something that's visually interesting. Yeah. Something that's aligned with your brand. Like what else are you thinking about when you're fleshing out like a concept?
Yeah. I would definitely say like, especially with personal brands, like face first. It's like, I can see that so many times, but like when I do a carousel, even if it's a text carousel, that first photo is
my same. Favorite. Yeah. Right? Same.
Yeah. Even as we go through, I will often in the background throw in my face again. Like I would say like, if I wasn't a business, you should look at my page and be like, what a narcissist, because it's just like my face is everywhere.
Yeah.
But it's like, that's what you need to do because people aren't usually experiencing it in your feed. They're experiencing it in their feed where there's so much happening. So like in a video, if you're going to do a voiceover video, that first clip, I want to actually see and feel you. You know, even if it's a rural clip, like I want you to be in it. I don't want it to be like a coffee on a table.
Because I guess think about like, I always put myself in the shoes of someone who's like in their doom scroll.
Yes.
They're like in their endless scroll. Their eyes are like starting to glaze over. Like if, if it's generic, they're not even going to realize that it's you.
Yeah. 100%. So yeah, face at the front of a carousel at the start of a video, just being in your B-roll as much as possible. If you are leaning into B-roll, like I said, talking videos, like actually once in a while popping up so people can really experience. It's so important in spaces where like trust is so big with like any type of service provider or personal brand coach. They want to hear that voice come out of your mouth and they want to see it and like understand that when they hire Marie, it's like not a jarring experience of like, oh, this is what she's actually like.
Yeah.
It's like, no, we know what that person is like.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. Amazing. And then when you're talking about like brand colors and photos and stuff, like I think a lot of people go to like, oh my God, I need to like hire a branding expert. I need to do a photo shoot. But what are some simple, like really attainable ways that people can start curating things a little bit more without like a budget necessarily?
Totally. I think even as simple as like stick to one Instagram font in your stories, you know, like if you're doing reels, stick to one font, stick to one color. Like, let's not have a hot pink and then the red and whatever, right? Like find the things that match yours. I find like if you can lean into really simple ways to have that visual brand recognition, use the same fonts on your carousels, those kind of things. Like obviously there's room to play. I think one of the least identifiable things is when I land on an Instagram profile and you can just see all of the different Canva templates they've tried. There's like no like, oh, at least let me switch these to my colors or my fonts. Like you can like switch it back to your fonts. So I think that's a really easy way to kind of build that. I think one of the coolest things about an online business is how easy it is to evolve. Like I could launch a website today and in 5 minutes I could change the front image. And in 2 weeks I could change the front image, right? So there's like this lack of permanency that's actually a really nice gift. Like if I were, you know, old school real estate, they send flyers. Like once you get those flyers printed, if there's a typo, like it's in there, right? And I think that's something people forget is like, you can find those things over time. I think we think too much about like, before I launch, let me get all of these things in line. I think there's a lot of conversation around things like signature frameworks even, or like naming your programs. And those things can be important. But like when you're starting, you can just be like, I'm hosting an Instagram workshop, right? And you can decide your color is purple for now, right? And you can decide a week later, oh, I actually like using these shades of purple, and you can slowly evolve. So I think, you know, we use it as a crutch sometimes to not move forward of like, oh, I have to launch my website. I have to get these things figured out. But I would say like, throw it out there, figure out how it feels, how it's responded to. Cause the worst thing you can do is spend all that time making like, you know, money too, like
messing around in Canva for an hour is not a revenue generating activity, everyone.
No, exactly. Say it again for the people in the back that are currently in Canva listening to this.
Like I know it's fun and I know it feels important and I know like I love, again, I love using my business as art and like the visuals of my business are something that I am obsessed with. But like you have, at a certain point, you have to just ship it and you have to recognize that like, it's going to change anyway. Like there's no such thing as being like, okay, I finally made it. It's finally perfect. Like it's going to change anyway. Get it like 90%, like A minus is fine. And I know so many people listening to this are like overachievers. I am too. Like if I got 99 on a test, I was focused on like the one I got wrong, you know, but like in business, it's truly like moving fast and like refining as you go. It has to be
100%. Once you get that first sale, because you press go, like it's going to feel so much better than spending the extra 3 hours you did on that website.
More time, like selling, more time building community, more time connecting with people. The last thing I wanted to kind of wrap this conversation with was, is just what is the difference between an audience that only engages versus building an audience that actually converts? Because I know that that's like, that's something that you do really well. That's something that you teach really well. And we talked earlier about like, it's not just pandering for like, to the likes. It's not just like praying to the algorithm gods, like having a social media that supports a business and supports income is a different game. So like, what is the difference between someone with a lot of likes and someone who actually like pays the bills?
Yeah, I think like a really good question to ask yourself is like, if you were eavesdropping on someone in your community and they were like, you have to follow, let's say Marie, because like, what is the end of that sentence? Because if even as like a multi-passionate person, like if you ask somebody to explain what I do for a living with my like real estate team and other things, I understand that might be a hard thing for them to summarize, probably a room for improvement on my part too. But if they were like, to say why someone should follow me, they have such a concise answer of how I make them feel, of how they experience my content. So really about what do you want that answer to be? And also like, what is that answer if somebody were asked? Because if your audience can be really clear advocates for you, it's reinforcing that like there is connection there versus like, oh, they have like a really cute kitchen in the background of their video. That unless you were like talking to someone of like, oh, you're renovating your kitchen, follow this person, right? So I think really building that connection, I think thinking about like, what are kind of your, I call them like swords you die on, but things in your industry that you believe like so wholeheartedly, you would like shout from rooftops. Mm-hmm. Sometimes maybe it's like things you see your competitors have the opposite opinion, and it makes you really frustrated that that information's out there. So mm-hmm. really thinking about the things you're so passionate about and getting louder on those, that's mm-hmm. always going to be something that can convert your audience. Yeah. And you know, the followers will come later, and it will slowly build, but it will build while you make revenue. It will build yeah. in a way that feels really good and also feels a lot easier. I find like the people that chase those trends or the things that are hot, mm-hmm. they're the ones that will often drop off for months at a time, and it's not an yeah. intentional choice, right? No. I think it's different if you choose to take a break. But for a lot of my students, it's like they can just keep going because it feels so at ease. It feels like putting yeah. themselves forward, and it's getting them results. So I think that's really right. important. Like, lean into the features that feel like you too. I have some mm-hmm. students that do so much business through Instagram stories, and their feed mm-hmm. kind of just looks like a regular person, like a mom's feed, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. that's not that active, but they figured out like stories, I can show up, I can feel good. I found that way to engage with my community that does mm-hmm. convert, and allowing yourself to like take off any pressure to show up the way that other people show up is mm-hmm. going to be a massive thing to let you move forward, to be like, no, I get to do these rambly vlogs, or I get to yeah. just show up stories, or I'm going to go live even though no one's going live, you know, like
yeah.
that's the thing that really works for you. So I think just being so true to what makes sense for your business.
Yeah. I love that. Permission to lean into like what is aligned for you. And I think the thread through all of this is really honoring what is authentic to you, what feels good. Not necessarily, that doesn't necessarily mean it's always easy, but like it's something mm-hmm. that you feel passionate enough about to like do the work and stay consistent and show up for, whether it's the type of business, whether it's your content. Like, if you can be true to yourself, you can't lose. Like, that, to me, that's the common thread of this whole conversation.
100%. And like, give it space to play. Like, you probably yeah. are running a business for yourself because you like to play, you like to experiment. So it's like, yeah. don't forget that and give it space. And I'm sure you have proof of this too. It's like the clients you then attract when you're being that person mm-hmm. are going to be like chef's kiss clients. I'm pretty sure I actually saw a post like your coach and you are really good mm-hmm. friends now or something.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's like, that's such an example of like, even she attracted somebody that's such a good match, that this often happens. You're like really good friends now.
Yeah.
Versus if you
yeah.
try to build something that's not authentic to you, you're probably not even going to enjoy working with the people that are attracted yeah. to it.
Right. Amen. For sure. So we have planted so many seeds. We have covered a lot of ground. Where do people go if they want more from you, if they want to connect with you, if they want to learn more? Where can they find you?
Totally. I'm pretty much Mallory Rowan everywhere. So Instagram, TikTok, my website is MalloryRowan.com. I have that workshop that I mentioned. And I also send regular emails just about marketing and business and nerding out on that. So MalloryRowan.com/email if you want to get those.
Amazing. Thank you so, so much for coming on today. This was such a good, just like value-packed, multifaceted conversation. So super appreciate you.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.